Amen. Almost. So just now, for the benefits of those who didn't know, we have been using the whiteboard with a plastic sheet in front. Because it was a new one bought by Sư Phụ Tân Siêu on our behalf, and we are very grateful. Then Jin Hao find it so difficult to wrap. I also find it so difficult to wrap. Then suddenly our Sui An, very sharp, he saw the edge there. There is a plastic there. So this one gives you a lot of dhamma also. The delusion of form. You got your pure whiteboard, beautiful at the back, like your true mind. But in front, that mundane mind is the plastic sheet. You never remove, understand? And you find it so difficult to rub on it. And when I write, it's like a whiteboard, understand? Where it's so perfectly stick on it. That's why it's so difficult to rub. Then at one time, Jin Hao said, maybe this one, not the good quality one. But when Sui An saw the plastic, we laughed. Then he took it out. Then Eng Bi, very good. He said, mundane mind collapsed already. Now shine forth. So everybody can see the true mind now. So about time to awaken. So now very easy to rub. So you don't have to worry. I don't need to trouble Jin Hao. I can rub. Can we use back the old pen? Thicker one. Ah, the fat one. Oh, never mind. I think this one easier to rub. I scared they cannot see at the back. Can you see? Cannot see. The fat pen better. Is it easier to rub now? A lot easier? A lot easier to rub? Yeah. This is a whiteboard pen. No problem. No, we have a plastic sheet. We are writing on the plastic sheet. That's why Jin Hao said, use water, okay. Yeah, it's water-based. Yeah, Sui An saw the plastic peeling off. Luckily, the sign came. Just leave it there. Thank you, Jin Hao. Okay, we'll go to page 16. Yes. Okay, pass the mic to Barry Chia. Jin Hao, pass the mic. Barry Chia. Yes, Sadhu.
Sorry, Brother Teo. This one has to come out.
No problem. Sadhu.
This one?
Yeah.
Part 3 of the cultivation sharing.
Oh, very good. Sadhu.
So actually, when we are silent and we are able to develop this broad-based awareness, there are many things that become very clear. Among the seeing is really the seeing consciousness.
Sadhu.
So one will also see the reality. All the rising and all the passing.
Yeah.
Not just inside, but outside. And the inside, outside. All the interaction.
Sadhu.
All just rising, passing. So the nature also mentioned in part 2, seeing, wanting to have a double deck pass. So while it arises, it sees. In some cases, it does drag.
Yeah.
But in the earlier stages, there were misery arising.
Yeah.
So anicca, dukkha. Sabbe sankhara anicca.
Yeah, very good.
Sabbe sankhara
dukkha.
But actually, there's no dukkha.
Yeah. It's delusion. Without delusion, there's no suffering.
There's no dukkha. The dukkha means there's still a mark.
Yeah.
So it's all arising, passing. So it's dukkha is because the mind still, pain, still got the attachment. So hence leading to the last one. Sabbe sankhara anatta.
Sadhu.
Mm. So this phenomenon all like that. So when this nature saw the misery mentioned in part two, actually then it start to want to survey and it says, how to help all these beings? You know, how to help all these beings who are in misery and still don't know.
Yeah.
And still think that they are right.
Oh, sadhu.
Actually, these days I don't know how to express a lot of things.
Never mind, no need words. Later on, the words will come. You will go through that phase. Inside, so, understood, but don't know how to share it and express it because stability not there. Later on, he will use his own word and he can share. Very good. Okay.
So while the tenants, latent, so-called latent tenancies,
they
are
yes.
still there.
Anusaya.
But the nature already can see the rising and then it's the ceasing. Right. But sometimes it still get carried.
Thank you. Sadhu. Thank you. Sadhu. Sadhu.
Sometimes it still get carried, but there was actually no misery.
Yeah.
There was actually nothing inside.
Sadhu.
Very funny.
Yeah.
But then, you know, coming back, you know, along the way, those who have affinity, in fact, very few who really can understand. Like Brother Ng, right? Actually, why he's here today, because last year after I returned from Cameron Highland, I don't know why he know.
Oh, is it?
Oh, he can contact me one, no? And ask me things.
Oh.
Oh, then I say, wow, you very good, ah. I go and have Dharma back, you straight away want to get it. So then I arrange, I want to meet him, and then, you know, tell him what I learned in Cameron Highland.
Oh.
And I wanted to also share with another lady, you know, who is also been sitting for very long.
Oh, okay.
But no affinity.
You must have affinity, yeah. You remember what I used to say or not? If people refuse to be helped, you cannot do anything. I always tell Kayamita, you want to help somebody, you want to bring him to see me, you make sure he wants to come, he or she wants to come on his own. If he doesn't want to come, please don't bring, because no condition, no affinity. But if there is condition, somehow they will appear. Then it's up to them, because that condition will only manifest during that window. Once you slip it, gone. So a lot of nature's law, that's the reason why when you take the Bodhisattva vow, when you cultivate until you finish the first three vow, when you have penetrated all Dhamma, and then you have that understanding, and you understand why living being is so heedless, so deluded. And they cannot see this. And to those who have the understanding, it is such a like pity. Because they lack this understanding, and due to ignorance, they become like that. Yeah. Because the thought conditioned them. Thought create a lot of delusion, wrong thought and other things. So you don't worry, yeah? Let things be. When there is condition, it will manifest. Then your nature will know. Then you will know how to accord, flow, and do what you're supposed to do. Yeah? No reality. Finally, you know there is no mark of a being to even help.
So that's why, you know, when I look at, you know, other than sustaining this form, right?
Yes.
Sustain. Actually, there's, you know, there's nothing to be happy, nothing to be sad.
Yeah.
It's just the way the, you know, whole nature is.
Yeah. Without that nature, got nothing. But this form of mind is different. It can come. It can live. There is wonderful existence. And all this, you will know. They are not real. Not you. Dependent
so,
originator.
So that's why while surveying, you know, all these, so many consciousness, all in misery, but they still don't know, and then they are still very smart.
Yeah.
And they don't want to know.
Correct, yes.
So, you know, when I saw the five stages of Bodhi mind,
Bodhi mind,
when he mentioned the
the fourth way.
Stage, right? That's why I asked the question.
Yeah, you
right.
came to my
when
house.
You
the first
the
thing you ask is that one.
Yeah.
Renounce samsara, what
when
do you mean?
Renounce the samsara, is
yeah.
it time to walk into the forest?
Ah, sadhu.
Because then from there, right, this form one sees,
yeah.
that it sees, and
yeah.
the mind sees.
No problem. Yeah, you will understand very clearly how the whole working of this karmic nature, how it conditions the form and mind. And when you understand this form and mind is not real, not you, it's just a segmented, karmically conditioned vehicle and tool for you to come, you become very different. Then you can walk this way no matter how long. The time is irrelevant because you already renounce samsara. Because samsara got no reality. Just form and mind, condition arising, dependent originating. But there is such thing as life, like I always say. Do you understand? Even not real, within the moment, split second is dead and gone. But there is such thing as a form and mind, having the condition to live the wonderful life, like Hatsuta said. When you realize true emptiness, the form and mind can experience wonderful existence. That is what the Buddha meant by Pativeda, the third phase of Dhamma. Okay.
This nature still cannot understand because
yeah,
there's
yeah.
no reality.
Correct.
There's no beautiful or sad or anything.
Yeah, at this level, you based on that nature, you will never understand this. Because this one is the third level of seeing. Kan san, yu si san. You come back to the original. Means see mountain as mountain because you can accord and flow. Whether he's enlightened, not enlightened, he when he come and tell you this is mountain, you say yes, this is mountain. When the enlightened one come, there is no mountain. Yes, there is no mountain. Because you can accord and flow with nature. But you know there is no reality. It's a convention that living being take. So that phase is later. But when you went through that transformation phase, like you say, you cannot express a lot of things. Then like everything is empty, no meaning. Yeah. Then like nothing, nothing, nothing. But nothing is still something. Understand? No. Because there is still the thought at the final level. Not final level, more fine level. Understand? No. Still coming back through the back door to say all these things. But you have the understanding, right? They cannot deceive you. Because you know it's dependent originating, condition arising. Then the anusaya, the latent tendency, is still there. Because finally, to root that one out, your mundane mind must collapse. Then completely gone. And then, that understanding from that phase onward, the cultivation is very different. Very, very different. Yeah. But you don't have to understand all this now. Based on what you are going through at this moment, you will develop good understanding, and that is good enough. Yeah. But as you continue life, existence, you will learn a lot more. That's why it's unending. Wisdom is unending. You cannot finish learning. Because life is evolving. Every civilization is different. Every moment the universe is different. So there is no such thing as I have perfected everything, understood everything. That is based on the cultivation. Yes, the perfection, the paramita is all there. But when it comes to life, it's different. It's the form and mind. Nothing to do with that nature already. Can you follow? The form and mind has its own reality. Although it's impermanent, leading to suffering, empty, non-self, no reality. Yeah. But there is such thing as life. There is such thing as existence. There is such thing as wonderful existence. But if you look at it from the ultimate truth, from the realization part, then you realize like what you say, no meaning. Understand? No joy, nothing, everything. But there is the phase you will go through. Yeah. Even Arahant go through that phase. Yeah. Then after that, this mind become different again. Yeah. Then as it continues with the cultivation, there are a lot more manifestation, a lot more understanding, a lot more transformation that will bring forth the different aspect of cultivation. Yeah. And that one is not easy to complete, yeah. but it can be done. Yeah. That's why the third vow, you vow to penetrate all dhammas until you have this great wisdom and understanding to do your work, to complete the perfection of the cultivation, to go for the fourth phase of Bodhi, the fourth stage, sorry, of Bodhi mind cultivation. And that one is very, very long, very, very long. And that one, you don't worry about how long it takes, because the understanding is different. You already have that understanding, and you are capable of renouncing samsara, and you know samsara is not what it is. Okay?
Thank you.
Yeah, thank you, sadhu. Thank you for the sharing. Okay, now we go back to our Heart Sutta. We are at page 16. Question 3, 2.4. Are the teaching of the three great Buddhist traditions of Theravada, Mahayana, and Vajrayana all the same, or are they different? What is your understanding? Definitely, the words are different, isn't it? But are the teaching the same? What is your understanding? Louder. Yeah, essence of the teaching is the same. Everybody got Four Noble Truths, understand? But the approach to Dhamma is different. It's influenced by the culture and all those things and many other things. Anyway, I will read the answer. I don't know what I write also last time. The essence of the Buddha's teaching. Oh, you copy from here or what? Oh no, oh good, from your own. The essence of the Buddha's teaching, like the Four Noble Truths, which includes the Noble Eightfold Path, are essentially all the same for all the three traditions. See? This one is definitely the same. It is only how they approach it that makes it appear to be very different, because of different commentaries and interpretation of sutta via words and terminology used. And all this complicate the matter further, as words are subject to various interpretation. What is more important is not to argue and create unnecessary division and misunderstanding within the various traditions, but instead to have an open mind to avoid all negativity. Make use of whatever that is relevant and suitable for each of us to progress along the path of Dhamma, following the Buddha's advice to the Kalamas, as stated in the Kalama Sutta. Harmony, love and understanding, following the Noble Eightfold Path, to resolve all issues amicably is very important. That is, no more negativity of mind. So no right, no wrong, then no need to argue, understand? When you want to be right, then very difficult. It will result in misunderstanding, argument, and all those things. So this one is just for your information. Question 4. Can you explain the difference between the Pure Land teaching that talks about Western Paradise and Nibbana as taught by Sakyamuni Buddha? So they thought it's different, no? Do you think it's different? The approach is different, of course, but the realization is the same. Nibbana is just Nibbana, the unconditioned. Pure Land teaching is based on Amitabha Buddha's great vow, which created the Pure Land, also called as the Western Paradise. For those disciples or cultivators who have the affinity with him to continue with their cultivation of perfection, by virtue of Amitabha Buddha and all the other great bodhisattva like Kuan Yin, Manjushri, etc., their great cultivation, their vows are so powerful because of their wisdom and perfection. Hence, this leads to their great vows being integrated into the nature's law, thereby enabling their vows to have a very special effect to create such pure land, and thus helping the cultivator or the disciple who know how to connect directly to their vow, without themselves having to be there or at any specific place to do the work or to help. Then the Pure Land or the Western Paradise is in the heart of those who have developed the cultivation and have the ability to connect directly to Amitabha Buddha's vow. We are their silent mind with very strong faith while chanting the Buddha's name, Amitabha Buddha's name. Or mantra. Chant until no one is chanting. If you can do that, then you have sati. You understand what is the meaning of no one is chanting or not. When there is someone chanting, it's the egoic mind. Understand? When no one is chanting, it's the awareness. There is aware of the chanting. That's why there is no one to chant. Okay. Chant until no one to chant is chanting. There is the vibration and the mind has become one in perfect harmony and synchrony. That's why chanting can develop very strong sati, mindfulness, leading, accumulating to samadhi. Question 5. What are the 31 planes of existence? This one, they are very confused because Mahayana and Theravada appear very different. You always heard about 31 planes of existence in Theravada teaching, isn't it? But Mahayana only tell you the 6 pathway. Liu Dao Liu Hui. Samsara is only the 6 path. You think it's different? It's not different. It's the same. Except how they categorize it. So I explain. According to Theravada tradition, the 31 plane of existence are rhyme of samsara existence, where living beings have to undergo birth and death following their karma. It can also be called the 3 worlds. You know what are the 3 worlds? Rupa loka, arupa loka, then karma loka. Karma loka is the sensual world. This is not karma. This is K-A-M-A. Not K-A-M-M-A. Karma is sensual. Karma loka. Then the other one is rupa loka, the form rhyme. So, sensual world, there are 6 rhymes. You have the deva rhymes, or the heavenly rhyme, then one human rhyme, and the 4 woeful state. The 4 woeful state, you all should know as Theravada practitioner. They are the, what are they? Demon, then animal, peta, hell beings. Then form rhyme, 16 Brahma world. They are the one who do the jhana, the 4 type of jhana, form jhana. They will take birth in the 16 Brahma rhyme. Then those who do the 4 rhyme, 4 type of formless jhana, they call arupa jhana. They will take birth in the formless world or arupa loka. These are the rhyme of infinite space, then infinite consciousness, then the rhyme of nothingness. Then the last one is the rhyme of neither perception or non-perception. So all these are in the teaching. You can see them on the green board there too. Kamaloka is the sensual rhyme of happiness, which is the human rhyme, and the 6 deva rhyme. So Kamaloka got 2 types. Kamaloka Sukati, that one belongs to the human rhyme, and the deva rhyme, or the heavenly rhyme. So if you are in the happy rhyme, why are there so much suffering? You are in Kama Sukati, sensual rhyme of happiness. When you are down there, the sensual rhyme of suffering, Kama Dukati, Kama Loka Dukati. You know the difference. Your suffering in this world, in the human rhyme, is nothing compared to down there. Understand? The Buddha gave an analogy. Somebody asked the Buddha. The Buddha told the king, is it? Let's say king, is it? On this rhyme of yours, you catch a criminal or a thief, then you want to torture him. What you do is, in the morning you take him out, you get your men to spear him, but don't kill him, is it? Just spear him 100 times, then put him back. Then after that afternoon, take him out again, spear him 100 times, then put him back. Then at night, do again. You can continue this type of torture. He said, compared to the hell ride, this is nothing. Understand? This is chicken feet. So you can experience by trying to be heedless and go down and see, find out, then tell us, come back and tell us. The future retreat, come and tell us. How is it like when you are down there? And that one really the rhyme of suffering. They call it Kama Loka Dukkati. But the Mahayana call it the sixth rhyme of birth and death. They also have the human rhyme, then the four woeful states. These are exactly the same. The only difference is Mahayana has one heavenly rhyme. They call it Tien Pa Jie. To define the six Deva rhyme, the 16 Brahma rhyme, and the four formless rhyme. That's why all the other they combine. Yeah? They have total 31 plane. So their heavenly rhyme, they got 26 plus 5 is 31. So it's the same. Okay? There's a note. No thought means you are ever mindful and constantly meditative, imply ever mindful to constantly cultivate Noble Eightfold Path. And this is equal to heedfulness. When you are silent without thought, you can be mindful, ever mindful to cultivate Noble Eightfold Path, and you can become heedful. Okay, chapter 5. 9:15 already. You want to end 9:30 or 9:15? 9:30, 15 more minutes, okay. Because we are still fresh. The fifth Heart Sutta, introducing Master Xuan Huang, the 45th patriarch of Sakyamuni Buddha's lineage. In the year 1948, after 3,000 miles of travel, Master Xuan Huang reached Nanhua Monastery near Canton and received the wonderful mind-to-mind seal or transmission of all Buddhas from the Venerable Master Xu Yun. Xu Yun Lao He Sang, he lived until the age of 120 and became the 45th patriarch in the line of succession from Sakyamuni Buddha. Master Xu Yun is also the teacher of Master Poyan Zhang Lao, which is the Wu Ping Jing Se Monastery or Vihara that I was invited there to teach this Heart Sutta. The late abbot of Wu Ping Jing Se. Then introducing the late Venerable Master Xu Yun. Now this one you must listen to his story. Very beautiful. You know how he got enlightened? You think he sit? You think he meditate? He didn't do any of this. He was in a retreat. But he was in bad shape because of some coming thing. Then what happened was, the person who come and serve them tea, the hot water, suddenly when he was pouring this hot water into the cup that he was holding, he accidentally spilled the hot water on his hand. Then all of a sudden, that instant, Xu Yun, the mind suddenly transformed. Because in that moment, there was no thought, understand? Because it's like in a state of shock, understand? But he was ready. Then, all of a sudden, the cup dropped. The cracking sound, trigger of the enlightenment. You go and ask somebody pour hot water. So a lot of this type of story around. Like Ananda, he tried so hard now to be the last of the 500 first council arahant now, to sit in the first council. They were waiting for him. You know what happened? Because he strives so hard, he cannot become arahant. There is craving to become arahant. So towards the dawn, when he give up already, he want to lie down and take a rest. Suddenly when he give up, he got no more thought. No? He got no more thing hanging, no more craving, no more desire, nothing. And when the mind was empty, when he was mindfully lying down to rest, before his head hit the pillow, he became arahant. Now you go back, try. Relax, don't think of anything. Don't try to know that, mindfully lie down. You must have the parami and the condition, understand? So there are a lot of enlightenment is not what you think. It can happen in many, many ways. I read to you Xu Yun, and it's very nice. Xu Yun, the late Master Xu Yun, was the 44th patriarch after Bodhidharma. Because Bodhidharma was the first patriarch of China. Then Xu Yun was born on the 26th of April 1840 in Fujian, China. He passed away in 1959, so about 119, almost 120 years, at the age of 120. He is one of the most influential Zen masters of the past two centuries, and arguably the most important in modern China history, Chinese history. Unlike Catholicism or any other branch of Christianity, there is no organization in China at that time that embraced all monastics in China, not even all monasteries within the same sect. Traditionally, each monastery was autonomous, with authority resting on each respective abbot. That changed with the rules of the Communist Party. This changed with the rules of the Communist Party. In 1953, the Chinese Buddhist Association was established at a meeting with 121 delegates in Beijing. The meeting also elected a chairman, four honorary chairmen, seven vice chairmen, a secretary general, three deputy secretary general, 18 members of the standing committee, and 93 directors. The four elected honorary chairmen were the Dalai Lama, Panchen Lama, Grand Lama of Inner Mongolia, and Xu Yun himself. Though Zen is less well known in the West compared to Japanese Buddhism or Zen, the teaching of Xu Yun has persisted within Asia, and he is still a major figure of Pure Land Buddhism in East Asia. Outside of China, the influence of his teaching is strongest in Southeast Asia, particularly in Vietnam and Myanmar, as well as in America, where his teaching has been transmitted through well-known monastic students such as Xuan Hua, Venerable Xuan Hua, Venerable J.D. Shankar, I don't know how to pronounce, and Venerable Fo Yuan Shakya. Then there is an explanation of his middle age and enlightenment. Now this is the part you must listen. At the age of 43, Xu Yun had by then left the home life for more than 20 years, means as a monk. But he had not yet completed his practice in the path. He had not repaid his parents' kindness. So he vowed to again make a pilgrimage to Nanhai from Fa Hua Temple all the way to Xingliang Peak at Mount Wutai San, the five peak mountain of the northwest, the Bohi Mandala of Manjushri. We were there before. He made one full prostration every three steps, just like what Sarah went through, three steps, one bow. Xuan Hua also do that. He prayed for the rebirth of his parents in the Pure Land, means he made aspiration. All the way, Xu Yun is said to have met a beggar called Wen Qi, who twice saved his life. You know who is he or not? He is Manjushri Wen Su. After talking with the monk at the Five Peak Mountain, Miss Wutai San, Xu Yun came to believe that the beggar had been a manifestation of Manjushri, see, foremost in wisdom. That's why if you look down upon beggar, be careful. You may miss out on Manjushri Bodhisattva. That's why be humble, have humility, good condition, better act, better do. Having achieved singleness of mind, Xu Yun traveled west and south, making his way through Tibet. He visited many monasteries and holy places, including the Potala, the seat of the Dalai Lama, the Tasi, I don't know how to pronounce, Hongpo Temple, the seat of Panchen Lama. He traveled through India and Ceylon, and then across the sea to Burma. During this time of wandering, Xu Yun felt his mind clearing and his health growing stronger. Xu Yun composed a large number of poems during this period. After returning to China during Xu Yun's 53rd year, he joined other venerable Master Puzhao Yuxia and Yinglian, Lotus Seal, to cultivate together. They climbed the Jiuhua Mountain. You know where is Jiuhua Mountain? Jiuhua San, Di Zhang Wang Pusa. And repaired the heart of Chui Feng Mountain, where Dharma Master expounded the Maha, I don't know how to pronounce, Vipulayat Buddha Avatamsaka, Flower Adornment Sutta. When Xu Yun was 56, the abbot of Yuliang, of Kaoming Temple at Yangzhou, planned to convene a continuous 12-week session of meditation retreat. They call it Dayan Meditation. Preparing to leave the group, asked Xu Yun to go first. After reaching Tikang, he had to cross the river. But he had got no money. The ferry left without him. Such a great being, also they don't know. As he walked along the river edge, because of karma, he suddenly lost his balance and fell into the rushing water, where he bobbed helplessly for a day and night, and was caught in a fisherman's net. Not easy, Bodhisattva. He was carried to a nearby temple, where he was revived and treated for his injury. Feeling ill, and he nevertheless returned to Yangzhou. When asked by Cao Ming whether he would participate in the upcoming weeks of meditation, he politely declined without revealing his reason or his illness. The temple had a rule that those who had been invited had to attend or else face punishment. In the end, Cao Ming had Xu Yun beaten with a wooden ruler. He willingly accepted this punishment, although it worsened his situation or condition. Then for the next several days, Xu Yun sat in continuous meditation. In his autobiography, he wrote, "In the purity of my singleness of mind, I forgot all about my body. 20 days later, my illness vanished completely," because his mind was very strong. "Then from that moment, with all my thought entirely wiped off," no thought, beyond thought, "my practice took effect throughout day and night," means throughout the day and night without thought, ever mindful. "I opened my mind and suddenly I was in brightness, similar to broad daylight, in which I could see everything inside and outside the monastery." And this is psychic. Energy field. "But he knew that this occurrence was only a mind state, mental state, and that it was not at all rare. He did not become attached to this achievement, but continue his single-minded investigation on the topic, who is mindful of the Buddha?" Over and over again, he dwelt into this topic without interruption. Then during the 12th lunar month, on the third evening of the 8th week of the session, after 6 hours of sitting meditation, the attendant made his round, filling up the tea cup. Xu Yun's hand was burned by spilling hot water, and his cup fell to the floor. At the sound of the crack of the cup, the root of all his doubt and delusion was instantly severed. He was joyous beyond words at having fulfilled his lifetime ambition. It was as if he had just awakened from a dream, and he observed how the condition of the past unraveled. That's how he understands. Then he wrote this poem. He said, "A cup fell to the ground with a sound clearly heard," means clarity, silent, without thought, empty. Then what happened? It arise and happened as if space was pulverized. You know what is pulverized? No more space, gone. Then the mad mind, mundane mind, the monkey mind, came to a complete halt, stop. That's how he realized Nibbana, enlightenment. Then after that, he became enlightened. He was shocked by the boiling water that spilled over his hand. Then the mind completely silent, without thought. Then at the crack, it triggered. It just awakened. Then like space, pulverized, go into the unconditioned. Then all of a sudden, the mad mind come to a complete stillness, silent. It just awakened. So enlightenment can happen in many, many ways, I tell you. Everyone is different. So you don't go and always want to copycat, imitate. Oh, Brother Chia like that, Brother Song like that, Brother Theo mentioned a lot like that. I also want to try. You cannot. This is unique to all these people. And you must have the condition to have it, to realize it. So the Dhamma is very different from what the mundane mind thinks. So when you go through, the cultivator will understand. It's not what you think. Then the next one. Meaning of we accord with condition or flow with the Dhamma. The word accord means not to resist. This is a very important understanding. Never resist anything. Hence there is harmony and no conflict. Conflict means disharmony, argument, etc. So to flow with the Dhamma means same. Means the same. That is, don't resist or argue. We are accepting things as they are. Or we are seeing things as they are. Without delusion. And just let things be. It is like martial art. If we were to resist and defend, we are rigid kung fu. Then both will get hurt. But if we can use Tai Chi to flow with it, then Tai Chi will send the force back to the aggressor who will be hurt by their own force. So all this is the Dhamma way, accord and flow, through wisdom, through understanding, no more delusion. The next one, 1.4, is very important. The phenomenal world and the illusionary world, these two are very important definitions. Definition of a phenomenon. This one you have to bear in mind. What is a phenomenon? Anything that is perceivable by the mind is a phenomenon. So phenomenon doesn't mean something moving, understand not, has activity. Even when there is stillness and silence, the moment you perceive something, there is a phenomenon. That's why it can be a mental phenomenon. Then, how do you know the world? We are our own consciousness and mental perception, isn't it? And since consciousness and mental perception are just mental images in our mind that arise and pass away continuously, hence the reason why it is said the phenomenal world of consciousness is actually the illusionary world of consciousness, empty. This one was what Brother Chia is trying to explain to you. The Mahayana also got a very famous saying. This one is very important. Last year retreat, I mentioned this. Then they developed good understanding. Perception of form is consciousness, whereas its non-perception is wisdom. This is the most profound, and the enlightened one will understand it. Now you understand why the Mahayana always say that the phenomenal world is a world of consciousness. This is also the reason why the Surangama Sutta say consciousness created the world and the continent, the star and the universe, and the knower become the living being. This one is from Surangama Sutta. Through thought and form delusion, the knower deludedly cling on to the fire aggregate of form and mind, or living being, thinking that it's real. And this is what you are, or they are. Hence, the deluded living being cling on to the false, becomes the traveler in space and time, wandering through samsara, and undergo birth and death for eternity. And this is how living beings who don't have the Dhamma and the wisdom and the understanding, they become like what Surangama Sutta say, because they cling onto the knower as a living being. Then they believe they are real. Then this living being become traveler in space and time for eternity. We have repeated birth and death. Understand? Then when it comes back to perception of form is emptiness, it's consciousness, whereas it's non-perception, it's wisdom. You understand by now, isn't it? Yeah? When you see things, like this table or that painting or the Buddha Rupang, when I ask you, what is this? And then I tell you the story better, the Zen story. Yeah. There was one monk. He thought he enlightened. No? He was so excited. No? He sent a message over to the master. No? Yeah. He said, I enlightened already, master. Yeah. Then he said, the eight wind no longer trouble me. Pa feng chui bu dong. You know what are the eight wind? Gain and loss. Then happiness and sorrow. Then praise and blame. Then fame and ill fame. You see, all this eight thing cannot disturb him anymore. So he was so excited. Then he quickly want to go over and meet the master. Then the master saw him. Oh, very good. Very good, he said. You already enlightened. Huh? Then he pointed at the table. He said, what is this? He said, table, where we drink tea. The master whacked him. Wow, he got angry. You know. He scolded the master. How can you be so rude to me? Yeah? When I came over to report to you the good news, he said, you say eight wind cannot move you. Yeah? One fart, he wrote that word, bushes, flew all over there. From that side over to meet the master. Then he said, you enlightened. You somehow say this one is a table. Then he whacked him. When you can have the direct seeing, when you see things as they are, there is no word, isn't it? Clear or not? No word, no concept, isn't it? So where got table? When there is table means what? You are using your mundane mind, thinking mind. That's like perception of this form is consciousness. That is the mundane mind, the thinking mind. Whereas the non-perception is the direct seeing. The non-perception of this form is wisdom. You see things as they are. You understand? And this is the meaning. So, I remember 20 over years ago when I read this sentence from the Surangama Sutta, this nature inside there got so much joy. At least it knows that there are Sutta who really have the understanding. Because after this thing inside transformed, there is no word to use, understand or not? It cannot put into words what all this thing is. Then when I saw it in the sutta, I realized, oh, this is beautiful. This is what the real Buddha Dhamma is all about. Then we finish off this, then we end. The note, true mind does not stir. True suchness, or ru putong. Only the mundane mind stir via delusion. Now you understand. You understand this, very easy to cultivate. Mundane mind without wisdom is the discriminating mind, fen-piercing, creating duality, creating division through thought, through concept, through idea. That's why this mundane mind, if you don't have the wisdom from moment to see clearly how thought divide and deceive you and create all this division, to create the disharmony and the attachment, clinging, grasping, and the suffering, then there is no way you can awaken. Then definition of hallucinatory, thinking that it's real, but it's actually not real. So mundane people, putujana, has a lot of hallucination, they call it. When you hallucinate, not real, like real to you. Then J. Krishnamurti said, the observer is the observed, leading to the seeing things as they are. We are the direct seeing without word. In a similar way, the Buddha also taught, in the seeing is only the seeing consciousness, and there is no one to see, hence no delusion. Otherwise, the moment you associate and cling on to what you see or what you observe, delusion and sakkayaditti has already arisen. Do you know why Krishnamurti say the observer is the observed? Like when you say you are observing Brother Sia. Who is observing who? Eh? You think there is a form in mind that observes Brother Sia. This one is logical, isn't it? Logical, isn't it? Very logical, isn't it? Because you are observing him, isn't it? Or I am observing the cup of drink that Pamasuri brought. Honey lime. I also not sure I heard the word honey. Or you are observing something. Are you really observing something? Why did Krishnamurti say the observer is the observer? Oh, now I can write. Very good. Big whiteboard. So, the observer, how to spell? Observer is the observer. Oh. S-E-R-V-E-D, yeah? So this one is B, yeah? The observer is the observer. Do you agree with this sentence by J. Krishnamurti? Yeah? Because you have self-delusion. It's just like seeing. When you associate with the seeing means, I see. Then, of course, it will be I observe, isn't it? But why did Krishnamurti say when you have direct seeing, when you have the understanding, the clarity of mind, the observer is no different from the observed? Do you understand? Huh? Oh, okay. Can you explain a little bit clearer? Because it's together, it's correct. But explain a little bit clearer so that other can understand. Because that whole action is one action, understand? Not? Who is the observer? Huh? Thought. Thought is observing thought. This is observed. The thing that you observe is still a thought, understand? Not? So thought is observing thought. So when the observer is the observed, it's just like the Buddha said, in the seeing is the seeing consciousness. There is no one to see. It's just consciousness with its content that go in. That's why there is no one. There is no observer. If there is an observer, there will be an analyzer. There will be a doer. And that is egoic. That is the thought. That's why he said, don't analyze. Understand this through investigation. When you silence your mind, Krishnamurti always talk about silence. Silent to him is the most important. When you are silent, there is clarity, there is understanding. When you are not silent, you cannot understand that thing that which every spiritual practitioner is looking for. He always said that thing. So it is exactly the same teaching when you understand. So J. Krishnamurti, if you really have a chance to read through his teaching or his sharing, you will come to understand he also has already developed that type of wisdom. That's why he can tell you all this. Because he really went very deep into the consciousness. You should read his book, that book, his notebook. Where he keep his note, he record all his experiences, how he transformed during the early years of cultivation. When I read this J. Krishnamurti's notebook, there was so much joy because there was so much thing that he went through and realized that was so beautiful. And this nature understood what that thing are, what those things are. That's why it's so beautiful. And those things, like he said, not easy, very difficult. Even in one stage, at one stage I remember somebody interviewed him. He was trying to explain this nature, this enlightenment and all this thing. Then that guy cannot understand him. He said, never mind. One day, someone will understand. He said, oh, that was beautiful. And I saw the video. It's on meditation. He said, meditation, he defined and he spoke on the video. Then that guy who interviewed him, they video together. He said, never mind. You cannot understand. But one day, somebody will understand. And that was very profound, what he mentioned. I couldn't remember what this is. But when I saw the video, it was so beautiful. Okay, we better end. Getting late. We will do the closing puja. Sharing of merit, transfer of merit, then we can end. So we are at page 22. At least today we cover 22. Recall to mind all of your wholesomeness, all of the merits that you have developed over the last 1 hour to 2 days. Then we'll share and dedicate all these merits to all beings, starting with the devas and the Dhamma protectors. Akasata cha bumata devanaga mahindika punyang tang anumoditwa cirang rakantu loka sasana ita wata jamihi sampadan punya sampadan sabbe deva anumodantu sabba sampati siddhiya idang menya tinang hotu sukita hontunya teyo idang menya tinang hotu sukita hontunya teyo idang menya tinang hotu sukita hontunya teyo imina punyang kamina mame bala samagamo satang samagamo hotu yawa nivana patiya sadhu sadhu sadhu. Okay, pay respect, triple jab, then we end our session for the second day.